Nun Chesamid Beis, if you count up a few lines from the bottom, it should say Desanya, about five lines up from the bottom.
Okay.
Five lines up from the bottom.
Yes.
And the Gemara is trying to prove that, which is the sheet of Rav Nachman and Rava, that if you're mazik begufo, in other words, if it's Adama mazik, right, then you chayv to pay exactly what you damaged. There's no din of agav shishin,
right,
that we spoke about.
Right.
And the Gemara wanted to prove that from a brisa, because the brisa says that if you destroy a vineyard of your friend, a vine of your friend, you pay its value, and so forth and so on. And shishim is not mentioned in the brisa.
Okay.
So now the Gemara wants to say, wait a minute, I'll quote you another brisa, and that brisa doesn't mention shishim, and yet that brisa speaks not only about Adma Mazik, but even about Mamana Mazik.
Okay.
And the Gemara's agenda here is to try to prove that sometimes the brisa...
Come on in.
The brisa doesn't even mention, you know, shishim sometimes. Yeah, you want to sit here if you like? Whatever's comfortable for you. So at the very bottom of Nun Chesam and Beis.
We're starting 12:15 today, right?
Yeah, this is Kedamish year.
Oh, okay.
All right. So Desanya, we learned in a brisa, Katma, which means he cut down Netiya. Netiya is usually a young sapling, like a tree. Rabbi Yossi Omer Gozrei Gzeros Shev Yerushalayim. That's a reference to two Tanoim that by the names Admon and Hanan. Okay, that's the sugya at the end of Ksubas. Omrim, they say that how much do you, what's the value, the market value of a young sapling? How much do you pay for damaging it? So it says, Netiya Bashnosa, if it's only a year old, Shtei Kesef. This is going to take a longer time. So that's a cheap amount because it's going to take a long time till it finally produces, you know, fruit. But if it's...
And that also takes into account that you can, because of Orla and whatever.
Right, but again, there's no shishim here. That's the main
thing.
No,
I understand that.
So if it's bas shteishanim, so it's that much older, is arba kesef. People, you know, it commands a higher price. Okay, now, let's take a little bit of a break here, because... I would press the return button here, meaning the next part of this price, which is called Ochla Chaziz, is going to project us into a gigantic sugya. Okay, so what's relevant for us to know before we start that new sugya of Ochla Chaziz is that the brisa seems to be assuming that you pay exactly what you damaged in the case of Adama Mazik.
Right.
There's no mention of Shishim, of Agav Shishim. And that would support the Shita of Rav Nachman and Rava.
Right.
I'm sorry, the Shita of Rava against Rav Nachman. Right. That's what I meant to say. Again, this brisa goes on and on and on. And at this point in the brisa, we're really projecting ourselves into a whole nother dimension of Shuma, of the question of how to evaluate a Hezek. And then we'll come swing back, which is going to be on Daf Nun Tesam and Aleph, to the part of the Braisa that mentions an animal that ate fruits. Okay? Now, Ochla Chaziz. So again, keep in mind that this is like a sugya within a sugya, a part of the brisa within the brisa. You know, if I had a chart on the blackboard, I would bracket this part of the brisa and sort of black, you know, darken it. Okay. Now, chaziz means tvua that's growing but hasn't yet reached full maturity. In the language of the Tanoim, it's called Chaziz. In the language of Shas, it's called Shachas. And Shachas is usually one third of its growth. And where do I know this from? This I know from Cheskes Habatim, because the question is, if a person wants to establish a Chazok, he's got to use and exploit the field in the normal way that other people do it. And if he does that for 3 years straight, then he can claim ownership over the field, even though he has no Shtar. So the Gemara says, what if he cuts it down shachas? Now, why does he cut it down shachas? Is he a crazy nut? And the answer is because by cutting it down shachas, he's able to feed his animals, and it causes the field to produce more quickly.
Okay.
If you wait until it reaches full growth, then you know you get only X volume per annum of produce. This way, you can really exploit the field.
So why is it normal to do it the other way?
So the Gemara says that it's not a good thing for the field. You really deplete the field of its minerals.
You're forcing it.
So for the benefit of a quick, you know, a quick turnover in terms of financial benefit, it makes sense to do it because here you save your food for the animals and the field, you know, keeps producing. But the Gemara ultimately, if I remember the final maskana, is that shachas is not a chazaka, because that's not the way you should treat your field. You have to treat your field properly, you know, with calm. So here's the issue in Nezikin. Do I pay you for the loss of shachas, which is a minimum amount, that's a pittance, or do I say, wait a minute, By virtue of the fact that you came into my field and started cutting down my tefuah shachas, you caused me the loss of the full-grown tefuah, meaning there's what's called the shas ktsira,
yes,
the harvest. That's going to be months down the line. I'm the owner of the field. If I would have just waited calmly and patiently till the time of the ktsira, I would have marketed a very high value of tefuah. In other words, do we look at Nezikin as the object is marketed now, the Hezek, you know, look at the Chefetz HaNisak, the damaged property now as it is, or do I see that damaged property in a broader context, taking into consideration the future and how it's going to produce? So Rabbi Yossi Aglili says, Nidon b'mishuyar shebo. And we have to learn that phrase because it's going to come up over and over again in the sugya. Now, b'mishuya shebo means the following. Let's say you're at a field, and this no goodnik, this mazik, comes in, and he cuts down half the field. What I'm going to do is I'm going to watch the other half of the field. And I'm going to see what's going to happen between today, the day of the hezek, and the day of ktsira, when I can finally harvest this field. And what I'm going to do is, I'm going to shots up the value of the hezek on the half of the field that you destroyed shachas by marketing the rest of the field in the ktsira period. That's called mishuyer shebo. Mishuyer is milosh and shir. Shir means when I can value, based on what actually materialized, the value of something that never got to, that was cut down prematurely.
Okay.
So that Rabbi Yossi Aglili, and again we're going to see echoes of this throughout this Brice and other Tanoim, and then the Gemara is going to ask, I knew this, I knew that, so why did you have to tell me, you know, in the name of Yeshua, why did you tell me Rabbi Yossi Aglili? Because I was going to try to find Dakus Thika Chilukim between the two. But the major breakthrough here, which we're going to see over and over again, in one school of thought, as opposed to the Chachomim that are going to reject this outright, is that Nidon b'mishuyah shebo. I have a right to demand payment from the mazik based on futures. I guess even in economics today, you know, in the market, they talk about futures. So let's say, for example, if I would destroy a bond, you know, a bond at maturity date is worth 10% more than it is today, or 20%, whatever it might be. How do I value this? So Rabbi Yossi Aglili makes the first breakthrough, and again, we're going to see echoes of this throughout, that Nidon b'mishuya shebo. Now, there's a little bit of a catch-22 over here, because there are many factors in nature that will play a role, you know, weather conditions, etc., that will play a role in terms of what's going to ultimately be with the remainder of the field. Right, for example, it might be a drought year, or other factors might come in.
Yeah, but that's the same.
So Rabbi Yossi is saying, Nidon k'mishuya shebo, means it's not an absolute given that I would take the shachas, imagine that it was fully grown and market it and value it in the market. No, I'm going to look at the meshuyar, that which is left, milosh and shiur, and see whether that actually reaches maturity. Because if if negative if negative weather conditions, meteorological conditions come to play, it could be that the rest of the field will never actually mature.
Yeah, but whatever affected the other half will affect this half too.
Exactly. That's the premise of Rabbi Yosef Glilu, that since I can use the Meshuyar to evaluate, you know, let's say today is January 1st, right? And the Ketzira is on June 1st. So since on June 1st, the rest of the field, the balance of the field, reached a value of, let's say, 1,000, that's when I'm going to charge you for destroying my shachas in January, 6 months earlier. Right. 5 months earlier.
So he's saying to do that rather than a theoretical amount, because they know over the years what we got for that anyways. But
that's not good enough.
Yeah,
because there's a practical consideration in real time. There could be elements that are going to prevent this shachas from reaching its fruition and gaining its full market value. And how will I know that one way or the other? I'm going to have to actually check it out by evaluating the Meshuyar. Right. And from the Meshuyar, I'm going to be able to make a hekesh. I'm going to be able to define and decide how much I can charge you and bill you for the shachas.
And if there were no Meshuyar?
I don't know. That's a good question. Let's say he destroyed the entire field shachas. I don't know. I'm not sure, but that's what we have. Meshuyah,
the field of the next person,
right? Maybe the next field over. Chachamim omrim roim kama hoisa yofa v'kama hi yofa. Oh, Jeff is here. Good. No, you came in, Jeff, just in time. Oh, Mitch is here too. Great. Okay. So, Rabbi, as soon as you take your seats and take a breath of air and fresh, get yourself settled, I'll tell you where we're up to. And basically what you want to open up is to Nun Tes Amid Aleph. We're actually just interpreting the last line on Nun Ches Amid Beis, and that is the Chacham say Rono so kama isa yofe v'kama hi yofe. Now what the Chachamim are doing is they're saying, you know what, leave out the shachas for a moment. Let's not rack our brains and try to evaluate shachas. You know, shachas was cut down prematurely, what it would have been worth if it would have reached full term. Forget about all that. The hezek, say the Chachamim, is on the karka itself. Kaviyachol, you're selling this karka. What element of hefsed, how much did this karka, how much was it devaluated as a result of cutting down the shachas? Meaning, if I were to buy this karka, what would I pay for the karka if the shachas was still growing on the karka and has potential to reach full potential? What would I pay now that the shachas has been cut down? And the difference is what the mazik has to pay to the nisak.
Well, they're mutually exclusive, these two svaras. Why can't you say it could be both?
Again, what we're saying is, maybe there's a third possibility if you're saying that, but let's just see Rabbi Yosef Glili and the Chachamim. They're both addressing the following question: how do we evaluate the Chiyuv Nezikin, the Tashlumin Nezikin of a Mazik who destroyed Shachas? And now we have two Shitas. We have the Shita Rabbi Yosef Glili, and Rabbi Yosef Glili says, you know what? What would this Shachas bring in if it was marketed 6 months down the line at the time of the harvest,
right,
when it reached full maturity? That's called the Meshuyah Shabo. And the Chachamim say, forget the whole thing. You're way off the mark, Rabbi Yossi. Let's look at the karka and imagine that the Nizak wants to sell his karka. How much was the karka devalued as a result of the fact that the Mazik cut down the shachas? Okay, now we turn to Daf Nun Tes Amud Aleph, and we continue with this very long brisa. Achla Smadar. Okay, so Rabosai, I'm going to need your help over here, because the language and the terminology is very important, and you got to get it straight. And it's very easy not to get it straight, so I need your help to get it straight. Okay? And for this, we really, to be familiar with this, you know, like it becomes second hat, you have to be a Baki in Zeroy. Because all the laws of Zeroy depend upon these terms that we're about to. here it's borrowed because we're dealing with Nezikin. But the real place, the original, is in Zeruiah. For example, a classical case would be Oral. You know, at what point is the shame pre Chal, and therefore these are Oralists? Because you have different stages of development, and everything depends on the critical transition point or access point is what you'd call in Hebrew Pricha. Pricha means developing or growth. So there's a stage before Pricha, and there's a stage after Pricha, and then there's a stage that's full grown development. And these are all different levels of the thing. So the language that we want to get here is smadar. Okay, smadar is immediately after Pricha. Okay, it's sort of like if you could imagine on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, you know, you go out to the almond trees and you say Ashkedia Prorachas. Do you remember that song? You know, that was one of those the songs that the Zionist Chalutzim used to sing. You know, so if you look at the almond bushes, you'll see the beginning of the budding on the tree of the almonds around Rosh Chodesh Nisan here in this country, and you can make a bracha on that and so forth and so on. That's called Pricha. The first stage in the development of the fruit after Pricha is called Smadar. Okay? The next stage after that is called Bosar.
Bosar.
Bosar. Beis Vav Samach Resh. Now Smadar and Bosar, which is stage one and stage two following Pricha, all these are referring to grains and fruits. In the case of grapes, we have something parallel to Bosar, but it has its own name, and that's called Pagim. Okay? For example, a baby in Israel today, a baby that's born prematurely, a preemie is called a Pag. Okay? Why is it called... Now again, the baby, Emir Hashem, will survive, and it will reach its full maturity, but it's premature. So the Pag is already a second stage after Pricha, but it's still premature. It hasn't reached the state of what's called Peros Gemurim, right? I feel like I'm in the Far East over here.
Sorry,
is this China or what? No, I'm just kidding. Okay, now the next stage, which is the final stage, is called Omdos Libotzer. Omdos Libotzer means it's ready to be harvested. It's fully grown. Okay. Now, the Brisa says, we're on the top of Daf Nun Tes Amud Aleph. Everybody have it? Achla Smadar. Okay. So Smadar, we said, is the very early stage of development. Really, just as the bud, you know, right after the bud appears on the bush, on the tree, on whatever it is. And now, this smadar was destroyed by the mazik. Is Rabbi Yeshua Omer, Roim Osan Ki Ilu Hein Anovim, Omdos Libotzer. We view and we estimate the value of the damage as if these smadar were already fully ripened, ready to be harvested. And Rabbo said, what does that sound like to you? Okay, so Mitch, you weren't here at the beginning of our pre-Shia discussion, but if you go back to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, it was Rabbi Yossi Aglili in the case of Shachas, which was also cut down prematurely, who said, well, let's evaluate in January what these fruits would be worth in June at the harvest season. And we're going to have to rack our brains to see why the names have been changed. You know, when you read a Mishnah of Brisa and the names have been changed, before it was Rabbi Yosef Lili, announced from Yeshua, that is an indication that they're two different shitas, and there's some machlokas between them, and that's going to baffle our minds, because fundamentally Rabbi Yossi Aglili and Rabbi Yeshua are on the same page, even though they're not on the same page. One's on Nun Ches and one's on Nun Tes. But if you follow what I'm saying, they're both looking forward to the future value of that which has been destroyed. Okay, then? Chachamim Omrim, Chachamim say again, and this is very consistent, that the Hezek here is not on the Smadar, or on the Shachas, as we discussed earlier, but rather on the field itself. Is Ron Kamoisa Yofeh, Vekamahi Yofeh. Let's figure out how much the karka itself was devaluated, if there's such a word, or devalued, I don't know, by this hezek. And that's what the mazik is going to pay. Obviously, the shita of Rabbi Yossi and the shita of Rabbi Yeshua is being very harsh on the mazik. In two ways. Number one, forget about the karka, let's talk about the fruits themselves. That itself is jacking up the price. And number two, not only are we looking at the fruits now as they are today, but we're looking at the fruits as they would be marketed 6 months down the line in the harvest season when they're fully ripened. The Chachamim, on the other hand, are makil in two ways. Number one, they're not buying into this whole future idea. And number two, they don't view the hezek, the victim, the chetzah nizak, that has to be evaluated and reimbursed, is not the fruits themselves, but rather the karka. When you value the karka, a particular area that was destroyed is not going to have a major, profound impact on the price, the market price of the karka. It's going to end up as a kula on the mazik. The mazik is going to pay a pittance. In fact, some of the Rishonim are so upset here because they think the mazik is going to end up paying zippo, paying zero. And I don't know if you ever heard of the Yamshel Shlomo, the Marshal. Yeah. He was so baffled by this sugya that he came to a radical conclusion. And he says that the Gemara doesn't mean you sell the karka. What's the value of the sale of the karka? It's a concept called kinyan leperos, which means there are two possibilities. I could sell you this field, or I could sell you the field only vis-a-vis its fruits. I still remain an owner on the guf hakarka. Yeah. You become the owner of the fruits that grow in this karka. And the Yamshel Shlomo wants to suggest that kamahi haisa yofeh doesn't mean a value of the karka, how much the karka would bring in, but if you were selling the karka for its payros, how much would it bring in? Because otherwise he doesn't begin to understand how you'll end up charging the mazik even a dime, because the loss of a little bit of shachas in a gigantic field that's being sold is negligible.
But why couldn't he maybe, isn't it possible that he's also, like I asked you before, just adding that to the other loss, the loss of the pay, of the sale of the payers. And so there's really two hezekim. There's a hezek to the karka and there's a hezek to the payers.
But the Bryce is assuming that in Hilchas Shuma you've got to give me one definition. How do you shots up, how do you evaluate?
You can't do both.
Either the hezek is on the fruits, and then you have a second question, is the fruits as they are per se today, or the fruits as they will be tomorrow, if you follow what I mean. Or is the hezek on the karka? And that's the fundamental issue here. And it all depends on whether you want to be makil on the mazik or you want to be machmer on the mazik.
Isn't that the same? If you were to, let's say, to stab somebody, then you'd have to, and you had, he didn't kill him, of course, and so you have to pay him for the, you know, sorry, boshes and all that, but you also have to pay him, don't you? You have to pay him off for the clothes. This is not an Indian of come, let me to rob him. So you have to pay for the clothes also. So
right. Why
is this not the same? You pay for the payers and you pay for the car.
Because I think what the Bryce is assuming is that there's a chefza nizak. In every case of Shumas Nizikin, you must define the chefza nizak. Right. Is the chefza nizak the The karka or the payrolls?
Okay, so it can't be clothes and the person.
Right.
So just, okay.
In the case of clothing, the clothes and the gufish alone, we have two cheftzes shanizik. But here, really, the cheftz nizak is the payrolls. Comes with the chachom and they say we have to be makel on the mazik. And therefore, we're going to shift the cheftz nizak from the payrolls over to the karka. That's the radical.
Because that's their driving force, is to be makel.
To be
makel. It's not a matter of
right.
They want to add something.
To be makel.
Okay.
Now, the Brisa continues. Rav Shimon ben Yehuda Omer Mishum Rabbi Shimon Bamedvar Mamurim. When do you introduce this idea of the karka, that the karka has been devaluated and we should figure out how much it's been devaluated? That's Bizman Sha'ochla Lulave Gifanim V'Yichude Te'enim. Okay, now this, my friends, again, without getting into all the botany of it, this is conceptually the earliest stage. This is a pre-budding stage, pre-precha. It's before precha. Now, according to Rabbi Shimon, when do you have this compelling driving force to shift the hezek, the cheftai nizak, from the peros to the karka? That's when basically you're looking at karka.
It doesn't have a shame peri.
It doesn't have a shame peri. It's not even smadar yet. Again, you remember there was smadar and then bosar.
Right.
Smadar was the earliest stage, but at least it was after precha. Now we're talking about a botanical phenomenon or growth that is pre-precha. Again, a double pre over here. Pre-precha. One pre in English, one pre in Hebrew. Okay? And again, if you're talking about gefanim, you talk about vines, okay? Clusters of vine, on the vines. And if you're talking about te'enim, you're talking about figs. But these are all in the earliest stage. Now, if we were to learn Zeroyim, our challenge would be to take this concept of lulve gefanim and yichure te'enim and compare it to a major, major concept in Zeroyim, which is called Chanata. And I have to tell you, I once studied this with my friend Rabbi Ilson, and Chanata is one of the most complex concepts in Shas. Nobody knows really what Chanata is. There's so many different shitos. Rashi says in Rosh Hashanah that Chanata, you don't even see anything on the tree. It just means that there's enough moisture underground in the roots such that now the vegetation could grow on its own. Other Rishonim assume that Chanata is the beginning of the something or other. I don't know what exactly. There's no buds on the tree, but it's beginning to burst out. So that would be a challenge if we were learning Zeroyim. Okay? Comes along Rav Shimon and he says, at what point do you have a right to say that the hezek is on the fruit itself and not on the heft of the karka, the ground? Is that called pagim or bosar? Okay? Now notice what he skips. He skips smadar. Smadar got lost in the shuffle. That's going to be the next sugi of the Gemara. And the Gemara is going to say there's a stira from the Resha to the Sefer, because on the one end he talks about lulaloi gefanim, and that's a hezek to the karka, right? Because that's before any heker of precha. On the other hand, he says, well, when do we shift as the hezek over to the fruits? That's bosar, pagim or bosar. He left out smadar. So from the Resha, he would seem to indicate that smadar is already considered a fruit because it's the stage beyond precha, and it's not lulav gefanim. From the Sefer, where he says no, pagim is a hezek to the fruits, and we look at it as if it was grown, then he seems to be assuming that smadar is still part of the karka. So where does smadar fill in? That's going to be the, you know, the main bone of contention in the sugya. He left out smadar, like in checkers. You know, if you jump over the thing, he somehow jumped over smadar. So Rowan also. Okay, so now we shifted the hezek from lulave kfanim, from the karka, to what?
To
pagim, or bosar, which is the peros. But what peros? Keep in mind, bosar, even if it's a later stage than smadar, is still not peros gemurim. So now we get back to the other question between, you know, Rabbi Yossi Aglili and Rabbi Yeshua, do we view it in January as if it was fully grown in June, in the Zman HaKtzir? He says, Roen Osan Ke'ilu Heinanovim Ha'omdos Libotzer, as if they were fully ripened grapes that were ready to be harvested. And that's called Bitzira, right? Ktzira to Chitim is to Bitzira Nanovim. And our problem now is going to be that we seem to have three Tanoim, not one, not two, but three Tanoim who basically are prophesizing with the same style of prophecy, if you know what I mean. They're all saying that we have to evaluate these fruits in terms of, even though now it's Shachas and now it's not yet, it's only Smadar, as if it was Peros, Gemurim, Ha'omdos Libotz. So why does the name change? You know, usually if there's a name change, it means it's a machlokas. But now let's get back to the original issue. Namely, in the case of Adav HaMazik, do we completely drop the idea of Shuma Agav Shishim, Ktani Mias? It says in this Braisa, Chachomim Omrim Roim Osan, Kamoy Seyofa Kami Yofa. We look at this karka, and we evaluate its market value. How much did it depreciate as a result of the Hezek? Lo Ketani Shishim. And here we're talking about a case of an animal that was Mazik. Correct? Because it was the animal that was eating up Ochla, was eating up the Smadar and the Bosar and the whole thing.
But we use the Shishim for the Karka then.
Oh, so everybody agrees that you need Shishim in the case of a Behema, of Mabon HaMazik. You're going to have to say that even though the Mishnah, I mean this Braisa, didn't mention Shishim B'Shishim, right? You're going to have to assume that it was somehow left out in the transmission. It's Hachanami, so too in the case of Adav HaMazik, I have a right to say Shishim. Now where was Adav HaMazik? Again, at the beginning of this Braisa, with the Gozrei Gzeirah of Yerushalayim, it was a person who came along and he cut down someone's tree. Whether it was a sapling, etc., etc., 1 year old, 2 years old, how much did he pay? And the whole discussion was about how much is the tree worth on the market, which was a proof positive to Rava that we're not interested in Shishim. So the answer is going to be that we're still going to introduce Shishim. I'm going to assume that Shishim was left out of this Brisa. So now let's go back and see if we can plug in Shishim into this Brisa. And how do we do that? So it says the following. It says, Katma Nitiya. Right? Katma Nitiya. And it says you pay Shtei Kesef, you pay Arba Kesef. So what are we going to have to say? Is Shomen Osam Agavi Sada. So I'm not sure technically how you do this. The logistics I find a little bit evades me.
It means Agavi Sada is he's going to evaluate the karka, or is he going to evaluate the berry?
Well, Agav Sada means that he's looking at the Sada in general. So,
right.
what did the Gozrei Gzeiris Bishlai mean when they said Netiya Bash Nosa Shtei Kesef? What do you mean Shtei Kesef? If you're telling me Agav Sada,
right.
So what's the Shtei Kesef over here? Let me just think one more time. I mean, I've been trying to figure this out. I don't know.
Can't it mean the shuma is going to be on the karka of a sada that's
60 trees.
That's at a certain
right. Stage. No, I agree with you. I'm going to multiply the tree by 60. But what I can't understand is what am I doing with the shtei kesef? What shtei kesef? If you're telling me it's relative to a larger field that has 60 trees in it, he cut down one tree. I mean, again, you can change the numbers, but the ratio always remains 1 to 60. Why are you telling me Shtei Kesef or Arba Kesef? I can't figure that out. Hold on a second. He has a footnote here. Maybe this would shed a light. In the name of Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz, it's one of the Rishonim. And he says, Shir Zeh, this Shir of Shtei Kesef, Eino El Shir Lamata. What's that in a word? Minimum. The Aino Shepachas Mizeh Eino Mishalim. Omnom Vadai Im Lefi Chishuv Bishishim Ole Han Erech Hanati Al Schum Zeh Olav Lahosif Ulishalim. Now again, you know, this introduces another variable here. He's saying that there's an absolute minimum that you have to pay for cutting down someone's tree. I don't know if that's a new takana. It sounds like a pitch from left field over here. Omar Abai. Now we go back to our Bryce. Rabbi Yossi Aglili, Rabbi Yishmael Omru Dover Echad. So again, the Gemara is not asking our question of Rabbi Yossi Aglili and Rabbi Yeshua and then Rabbi Shimon, they all say the same thing. Now the Gemara is asking from Rabbi Shmuel. Okay? And hopefully we'll get back to Rabbi Shimon later on. Fine. Rabbi Yossi Aglili Hadi Amar. So Rabbi Yossi Aglili says in the case of Shachas that we evaluate it b'mishuya shabo. You remember that whole discussion about mishuya, what it's going to be worth in the harvest period of time. Where's Rabbi Yishmael? I mean, we had a whole long list of tanoim in this price, but Rabbi Yishmael's not on the list. Desanya, another price. Now we're talking about behemto shehizik, right? His animal damaged, and the Torah says meitav sadeu meitav karmi yishalem. So he pays Meitav. So the Braisa records machlokas between Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Chani and Rabbi Akiva. This is the old pronoun issue, right? The Torah says, Sodei who? Okay, so who's the who? And Rabbi Shmuel says, Meitav Sodei shall nizak, u Meitav karmo shall nizak. Which literally, Rabosa, if we take it literally, the Gemara is going to go bonkers over this, and it's intolerable. Literally, it means that even if my animal destroyed the ziburis, you know, the lowest level, quality level of your karka, nevertheless, I will pay you as if my animal had destroyed ibis. And there's some sort of magical substitution here. Rabbi Akiva Omer Loba Kosavel Ligvos Linizikin Min Aidis, meaning Gvia, it's halach and Gvia from the Mazik. When the Nizak collects from the Mazik, if the Mazik, let's say, is paying in Karka, then he has to fork over Idis, his best quality Karka. And Rabbi Akiva extends this for Kavachomala Hegdesh, and how much more so if we damage Hegdesh and we have to pay Hegdesh, we have to pay with Meitav, with the best quality of our Karka. So the Gemara says, what's going on here with Rabbi Yishmael? Meitav Sadev Shal Nizak? I don't get it. The Shar ate the worst karka, and now you have to pay as if it damaged the best karka. Why should he pay more than he damaged? So the Gemara says, Lo Tema, don't accept Ki Rabbi Idi Barovin, the interpretation of Rabbi Idi Barovin, the Omar of Idi Barovin. That his animal, the Mazik's animal, ate one particular patch. We don't know. If it was a low level, quality level. Now, again, exactly why we don't know, I that baffles me. But let's say they cut down, and in the meantime, the whole field, and then there's a whole debate here. You know, which particular quality of aruga did he cut down? Or maybe because in that field there are different arugos, and once the aruga is destroyed, we can no longer determine what was the quality level of this aruga. Is the Omar Kum Shlim Shmeina Abimeta Dikahashta? Now we're saying let him pay. Let him pay the higher level of Meta. That's not something that we can accept. Hachi lo amrina. We cannot accept Rav Yidi Barovin's interpretation. My time of why is it so intolerable to us? Because Hamotzi Mechavera Olav Araya. It means that it's impossible, says the Gemara, for Rabbi Yishmael to have said that if we don't know if the Hezek was X or Y, And Y is greater than X, that he pays Y, because it's the burden of proof is on the Nizak, who's collecting from the Mazik, to prove that he deserves Y, and it's not enough for the Nizak, for the Mazik to pay X. That's how Motzi Mechavel of Haraya. So how can you tell me if we don't know whether the animal attacked the highest level, quality level of a Shmena, or the lowest level of a Khusha, that he could charge him for a Shmena? Ella, but rather we have to reinterpret Rav Yishmael. What was he saying? B'meitav dila kameh. Okay, this is the breakthrough now. B'meitav dila kameh. This is what I call the futures. Dila kameh means what's coming down the line. And what we have a right to do is umayniu ki heich desolik. In other words, he cut down, his animal cut down these arugos before the harvest period of time. And we have to determine how much or what was the additional value of this produce if it had reached its fruition, if it had reached maturity in the harvest season. So the chiddush here of Abaye is that not only is Rav Yossi Aglili on the page as far as futures are concerned, which is called Hamishuyer Shabo, in the case of Chaziz, which is Shachas, where he cut it down at the early stage, but even Rav Yishmael is on the same page, and he also believes that the Chiyuv of Nezikin will be evaluated by futures, by what this fruit is going to be worth, what monies it will bring in the Amos HaKotzir, in the harvest period of time when the fruits reach full maturity. Amar Mar, now let's go over to Rabbi Yoshua. Rabbi Yoshua in our Brisa was of the opinion that in the case of Smadar, we evaluate it as if it were anovim ha'omdos libotzer. Okay? And then we had Rabbi Shimon, who is of the opinion that in the case of Achla lulavik fanavi chude te'edim, which is before Pricha, then you evaluate the karka and how much the karka went down in value. However, If it was Bosar, then you pay for the fruits. Not for the karka, but for the fruits. Yeah? Now, it says in Rav Shimon, Achla lulavik fanav yichure te'enim, says the Gemara ha-smadar. Keep in mind that Rav Shimon didn't mention a word about smadar. He jumped all the way over to Bosar, implying that smadar, which is the grapes immediately after Pricha, is Rono Sanke Ilu Anovim Omdos Libatsar. And again, that same concept of futures. However, Ema Seifa, let's look at the next statement of Rav Shimon. Rav Shimon says, Achla Pagim O Bosar, only if it reached the stage of Bosar, then we evaluate it as Peros, as Anovim Omdos Libatsar. Is Bosar who deroin osan kilu anov momdos libotzer ha smadar, if it was in an earlier stage which is called smadar, is roin osan kamehi yofe vekama hoisa yofe, don't we go back to the karaka? So basically there's a contradiction here in the ratio of the Sefer of Shimon and the Nafkamina is going to be smadar. At what point in the development of the fruit do we finally consider it not as karka, but as something that is completely independent of the karka? And then Afkavina is going to be smadar. Amar Ravina says, kroch vitni. What does it mean, kroch vitane? What we're going to do is we're going to add a little piece in the brice in order to shed a light on the brice. When it says in the brice that Lulavei Gefanim is karka, we're going to read it like this. When do we view it as karka? And the depreciation of the value of the karka is man. Sha'achlo lulave gefanim v'ichurei te'enim. Aval achla smadar pagin obosar. He adds the word smadar now. Then ro'na son kilu anovim omos omdos libotzer. Says the Gemara, you're in trouble now. Why? Because there's a name change in the Brisa. See, Hachi, Rav Shimon ben Yehuda, Heine Rav Yeshua. Right, Rav Yeshua was the one who said that once it reaches the stage of Smadar, is Ro'an Osan Kilu Anovim Omdos Libotzer. Now that you've added Smadar into Rav Shimon, together with Bosar, then Rav Shimon is now saying the identical thing that we saw in Rav Yeshua. So again, the Gemara doesn't seem to be bothered by my question here, that there are so many different Tanoim that reflect the same fundamental principle in Ezekiel, that we consider what the object would be worth later on when it would have reached full maturity. Okay? The Gemara is more interested now in focusing on Smadar. In this Brisa, do we have both Rabbi Shua and Rav Shimon saying the exact same thing about Smadar? And the Gemara answers, and this is a curveball here in the whole sugya, Ika Beinayu Chash Gufna. So Rav Osa, if you were my students in a high school class, I would tell you to open up a new page in your notebook, and the title of that page would be Chash Gufna. This is an entirely new, shall I say, branch of Hilchus Nezikin. And let me explain to you what I mean by this. In many, many cases of Nezikin, even though I've destroyed X that belongs to you, you saved yourself some sort of an expense that you would have saved. Like, for example, in the classical case of Dmei Vlados, you remember where a man knocked out the fetus of a woman, so paradoxically he saved her a buck, because in those days they used to pay a midwife, they didn't have insurance like we have today, so they paid a heavy sum for the midwife. So as a result of losing the fetus, she doesn't have to pay for the midwife. Or for example, you have the case of Ma'anis, a man rapes Nebuchadnezzar, and the Gemara assumes that there's a certain element of tsar in the first bia. So that now, even though the Ma'anis has caused her a certain element of tsar, but he's also saved her a certain element of tsar. And the Gemara feels that here also, which with regard to cutting down someone's fruits, even though the Nizak lost the fruits, but he avoided, this is a double negative, he avoided the loss of Kash Gufna, because what's Kash Gufna? When you have vegetation growing, the vegetation itself saps the roots, shall we say, of its moisture, and that's called Kash Gufna. I'll read to you the language of Kash Gufna here. Erech HaGefen Yored, obviously the Gefen is worth less now that you ate its unripened grapes in the case of Smadar, but on the same time, the Erech HaGefna Yored Mipnei HaAnovim, had the Anovim reached full growth, then the vine would be worth less. Why? Sha'anovim Yonkim, they nourish, right, they sustain themselves, Milach Luchiso Shel HaGefen. So they're really depleting the Gefen of its moisture. So the Gemara wants to say now that there's a machlokus between Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Shimon about how to evaluate Nezikin. Shall we subtract from the damage the Kash Gufna, in other words, that element of future loss to the value of the vine because it's producing and depleting itself of its moisture? V'lo misayme. But the Brisa doesn't tell us who holds what. The Gemara, the Brisa tells us, Reb Shimon tells us, Rabbi Yeshua, but it doesn't record. Is Abai Omer Misaimi Misaimi? Abai says, I need another Brisa in order to determine who holds what. Mantana de Chayesh Lekash Gufna, which Tana should identify as the one who wants to subtract from the evaluation of the Hezek the future loss that was avoided. Rav Shimon Yehuda, the Sanya, Rav Shimon Yehuda, Rav Shimon, Rav Shimon Menasya, Ha'ones, when a man rapes a Nara, a Bsula, Eino Mishalim Esatzar, but Nesha Sofol, it's Taratachas Baila. Since he saved her, that tsar of Bila Rishona, that has to be subtracted from the value, the sum total of Chavola, of Damim, that he pays. Amru lo, and the Chacham say no. Eino Dome Niveles Beratzon Leniveles Beones. In other words, she still suffers a lot more as a result of this rape situation than she would if she had a consenting marriage relationship. In any event, we see clearly that according to Rav Shimon ben Yehuda, when we calculate Nezikin and how much the Mazik should pay, that's what we call Shuma, we have to subtract from the overall sum that Hefseh that would have come about if not for the Nezik. Do you hear the paradox? The Nezek is saving some sort of a hefseid. And that too should be calculated according to Rav Shimon in this whole picture. Rav Yeshua doesn't know of such a thing. And Omar Abaye wants to say that really in truth this is an old, old machlokas. This kash gufna that we opened up a new page for. Hani Tanoi, these Tanoim, Rav Shimon ben Yehuda, Amru Dover Echad, and another group of Tanoim. Rav Shimon ben Yehuda Hadamar, and that's what we already learned, that the Ones doesn't pay that element of Tzar that he prevented her, he saved her from, for the Tzar Liyosid. But who are these other Tanoim? Hani Tanoim. Mayhi. The Sanya we learned in a Braisa. And this is the case where a man causes a pregnant woman to lose her fetus. Rav Yossi Omer, Rav Yossi says, in evaluating Dmei Vlados, Nake means subtract, Chaya is the midwife that she would have had to pay to deliver the baby. Ben Aze Omer, he goes even a step further, he says, Nake Mizonos. In other words, a woman who's pregnant needs more food to eat. And I don't know if that's biologically proven, scientifically proven, but
yeah,
is it true? Because she's feeding up Vlad as well.
You never know. 500 extra calories a day.
Really? Thank you so much. Okay, good. I like it when sometimes science reflects what we learn in Shas. It doesn't always happen that way, but it's good. So we have a good case. I thought the Gemara was talking about a pickle. You know what I mean by pickle? You know, a pregnant woman wants to eat a pickle. No, the Gemara says that as a result of her pregnancy, she's going to eat a lot of mizonos. So she's a little bit more expensive to feed. But now that paradoxically, it's almost cynically, you know, she lost her vlados through because of this assault. She saves herself that loss of mizonos, or if you will, her husband saves himself because the main vlados are paid to the husband. Is Mandi Omer Nake Chaya Kolshke Nake Mizonos? Mandi Omer Nake Mizonos, Aval Nake Chaya Lo. In other words, it works the other way around. Ben Azai rejects Rabbi Yossi. Why? The Omer Loi, because the Baal has right to say to Nazi, Itzisa Didi, my wife, she's different than the average pregnant Yoledes. Why? Pekichai, she's very good. Velomi Boy Chaya, she doesn't need a midwife. Yeah, you know, she can give birth at home. What do they call that? Home birth, whatever it's called. Lomi Boy Chaya. So therefore, according to Ben Azai, right. So that's called a pikkus. Rav Huna Bered Rav Yeshua Ovid Uvda Kavasid Rav Nachman Bishishin. Okay, so this part I understand. The next line I don't understand. They implemented the view of Rav Nachman that even in the case of Adam HaMazik, we have to be makil on the Mazik and we evaluate it relative to 60 times its size. And this is against Rava, who is of the opinion that in the case of Adam HaMazik, we're not going to be lenient. He's going to pay the straightforward value of the object. Okay. Now, here's where I get lost. Lishnach Rina, there's a second Lashon, Rav Papa, Rav Huna, Braid, Rav Yeshua, Shamu Dikla, Agav Ktina Di Ara. That Rav Papa, in a case where somebody cut down a dekel, some sort of a date tree, they evaluated the Tashlume Nezek, Agav, a sod. Ara means a field. Ktina Di Ara, meaning a field that's, let's say, 60, it's a small field, it only has 60 dekoim in it. So again, what we're coming back to is the Shita of Rav Nachman, which you may recall was what we did yesterday, was the Shita of the Reish Galusa, that you still, I'm sorry, I got that wrong. Rav and the Reish Galusa say the same thing. Rav Nachman is of the Shita that you are, even in the case of Adav Amazik, you evaluate the Hezek Agav Shishin. Okay? But then, look at this next Gemara. V'hilchasa kavase d'Rav Papa Rav Huna b'Reid Rav Yeshua b'X. In other words, with regard to X, we paskin that you evaluate it relative to Shishin, to the larger field. But v'hilchasa kavase d'Reish Galusa b'Y. And in the case of Y, we're going to charge him the full price of the loss of the tree. Okay, so now what's X and what's Y? Here's where Abosai, I got totally lost. The first case, X, which requires Shishim, is a Dikla De'arma. Okay, it's an Armenian date tree. And then we should evaluate it agav a larger field and be makil on the mazik. But we're going to be machmir on the mazik in the case of dikla parsa in a Persian dekel. So Rashi, if you take a look, says that a Persian dekel is chashuv mi'od. I guess it's like a rare kind of a tree. Maybe the fruits of the tree are somewhat delicacies. I don't know. But in such a case, we're going to hit him with the full brunt of the law. I mean, it comes out, if I understand Rashi correctly, but I mean, I want to share with you the Rush's view on this, but that according to Rashi, whether we should be lenient on the mazik, and we're talking about Adam Mazik, or be machmir, be more strict and harsh, it all depends on the severity of the hezek. Like if he's such a chutzpin yak, and he's such a no goodnik, and he should be tied and feathered for destroying a dekel parsi, which is Rashi says is chashuv miod, then we're not going to give him any leniencies. But if he only destroyed Nebuch a dekel armoi, arami, then that's already more of a humble kind of destruction. I mean, again, the guy is a no good, like he's walking around with an axe and he's chopping down Yenim's tree. So I don't know why it should make much of a difference. I guess we're taking into consideration the compassion for the Nizak, that the Nizak, in order to replace this Dikla Parsa, which is the Chashuv Dekel from the Persian community, we have to afford it with a higher compensation. However, the Rush has a different shot in the Sugya, and he says the following. Again, you really have to be an expert in botany, I guess, for this, or maybe in agriculture, I don't know. He says the following. A dekel parsi is a fully grown dekel, shenigmar gidulo. To the extent to which the Rush says that you can take a dekel parsi, you can cut it down, and you can replant it elsewhere. That's how much of an independent entity it is. And therefore, says the Rush, Eino Shaykh Lakarka, Venisham Bifnei Atzma. Beautiful. The Rush says it's an independent object. It's like the Peres Gemurim that we spoke about before. The Ilu Dekel Romoi, okay, he has a different girsa here. He doesn't have Armoi, he has Romoi. Lo Nigmar Gidulo, Vadai Nechshav Kechelik Meakarka, Venisham Al Gabi Karka. So it has nothing to do with the rarity or the, you know, the delicacy or the special nature of the and the value of the karka on the market. It has to do with whether or not it's a heft of a dekel or if it's a chetz of karka? Is it part of the karka because it still needs the karka, or is it something that you could simply uproot and replant it elsewhere? Okay. Elazar Zeira. What time is it now? About one? Okay, Elazar Zeira. Now, in the Gemara, you know, we talk about Elazar, but this guy is somebody different. It's not the same Eliezer that we know all of Ashas, who is a Talmud, I think, of Rabbi Yochanan. Maybe he was the same generation of Rabbi Yochanan. This is Eliezer Zeira, Eliezer the Small. Like, do you remember the Gemara sometimes called Shmuel HaKadam? And it's kind of an anova here. Now, I point this out to you only because the story that unfolds here on Daf Nun Tes Amid Beis would seem to indicate that this Eliezer was not such an anov. So we're going to have to figure out why he is an anov. Okay. Havisayim, it's so beautiful that we're learning this during the 3 weeks. You know, it's not coincidental. Everything is min hashamayim. Having sayim misamne uchme, when he wore his shoes, they were black shoes. Okay, v'koy b'shuka dinarda, and they found him in the marketplace in Narda wearing black shoes. Now, apparently, from the time of the Churban HaBayis and on, it was a minhag to wear black clothes, but not black shoes. He was black from head to toe. Ashkechina debay reish galusa. In other words, the entourage, the, you know, the close cohorts of the reish galus found him. The Amrile, and they said to him, Maishna hani misane. Why are you wearing black shoes? Omalahu, so Eliezer Zeira responded, Dekoma Abilna Ayushalayim. I'm absolutely bereaved and depressed over the loss of Yushalayim. Omru Leis, so they said to him in a facetious way, At Chashivis, are you such a Choshva guy, Disabuli Ayushalayim, that you can extend your Avelus?
Who are you?
You know, like, you're proving from guy over here. You're wearing black shoes. We don't wear black shoes. Sovereign, and they accused him of Yura having. Now, I want to spend a minute here to talk to you about Yura. Yura means when you take upon yourself levels of piety that don't reflect your inner soul. You know, you're not really ready for it. You want to show everybody, Ich bin Afgumir, you know. Like the Gemara says in Brachas that he's getting married and he's going to say Kriyat Shema. You know, he's technically Potter from Kriyat Shema, but, you know, I'm going to concentrate on Kriyat Shema. I'm not worried about Dam Basula or anything like that. Now, the fascinating thing about this Gemara is that Yura is something the Gemara takes very, very seriously. Asyua v'chavshua, they locked him up. Whoa. I mean, again, I'm reading this literally. If you want to tell me the Gemara is...
That's not so bad. Lots of times they gave him a look and he died.
Oh, okay. Omalahu, as they're locking him up, he's screaming and yelling, Ano gavaraba no. I'm a gavaraba, a great guy. I'm a godel of Yisrael. This is the honor. This is Eliezer Zeira. You know, but I guess, look, if it's a matter of, you know, incarceration or you're showing your true value, your true status, then there's no anav over here. Omile minoyadina, and how do we know that you know, they didn't recognize this guy, they never met him. How do we know you're an Adam Gadol? Like, prove it to us. Omalahu, he said to them, I'll test you, I'll give you two options. Oh, Atun boy mine milsi, the US Mir question, come up with the most difficult question, I'll answer it. Oh, I know you boy me naichu mil. So give me the option to ask you a question and stump you. Amru le boy at. You ask us a question. You'll prove us. Show us your genius. Your godness. Amru haima de kotz kufra, my mishalim. A person cut down dates that weren't fully ripened on the tree. That's called kufra. What should he pay as a mazik? To be kufra has no value. You can't sell kufra on the market. Basically, they were saying to him, he doesn't have to pay a dime. So Eliezer Ziri says, come on, are you joking? For Havi Tamre. How could he not be Chayev when he cut down these, you know, early stage tamarim that are going to develop into tamarim that are worth a great deal on the market? Amulei, Mishalem, Tmei Tamre. All right, you won this round. Let him pay Tmei Tamarim. Amulei, he said, come on, who are you fooling? V'alav Tamre Shokel Bine. He didn't destroy Tamarim. How can you tell me that he should pay Tamarim? Amulei, at this point, they threw their hands up in the air. Amulanat. Okay, you do better than us. You know, you got us in a quandary. You have Imanavsha. Amulehu Bishishim. What we should do is, we should evaluate a date field of a grove. Let's call it an orchard or a grove of date trees, such that it has 60 date trees. Right? How much would the buyer pay for this karka with the fruits that again are unripened fruits on the date tree? Again, one day tree of 60. And how much would he pay? And how much would he pay now that this day tree has lost its kufri, its kufra? Amrulei man omar kavasek. We never heard such a thing. This was brand new to them, this whole concept of being Mishar Vashishim, Agav Shishim. Amalu, you know, he said to them, Hashmuel chai, Shmuel's alive, who based Dino Kayim, he has a beznin. Shadru Kami to Shmuel. Send this question to Shmuel and see what he says. Amalahu. Shmuel responded. Shapir Kamalahu b'shishim. He was right. Shishim. Shavku, they let him out of jail. But what we see is that Avelus.
They gave him back his black shoes.
Yeah, I don't know what they do with his black shoes. They gave back to him, probably. Yeah, I think Jeff, that's an important point. They gave him back the black shoes. What does this mean? It's a big yisod here, Rabosai, that Avelus for Churban Abayis is relative. You know, it's a sliding scale. And it really, it's meant in the ideal sense to reflect your inner sense of bereavement. No, two people have the same anguish or grief over the loss of the Beis HaMikdash.
Obviously, the deep Mezakiura.
So it's not Mezakiura, because if it's genuine, it reflects his inner self, that's not Yura. And I wanted to bring a raya to this from the Rambam. The Rambam says that on Erev Tisha B'Av at the Sudam of Six, we don't eat two tafshilin, but we're allowed to eat one tafshil. Then the Rambam says, Kachi Darkam shall Shar B'nei Adam, most people. But then he goes on to say, Avol, I forget what he calls them. If you have a Rambam Hilchos Tanis, I'll show it to you. But Avol Chassidim, he says, the real pious people, they won't even eat one tafshil, but they put themselves down right near the oven and they cry and they cry and they cry. But you see again that there's a relative sliding scale with regard to Avelus. Because Avelus, Rav Salvechik, he always tells us, is a kim shebelev. It reflects the inner feeling. Rav Shimon Omer, Achla peros gmurim, mishalemes peros gmurim, imsa sayin. In other words, there's no din of agav karka if the fruits are fully ripened. My taima, what is the logic of Rav Shimon? And the answer is, Hadi Omar Achmano, when the Torah says, Ubir b'stei acher, is what stei acher? Melamit sheshomin al gav hasodeh. That you evaluated based not on the individual fruits that were destroyed, but relative to the field, the value of the field. Hani milu, that only applies midi ditzarech l'sada. When is it considered part of the sada? Then you can evaluate it relative to the sada and the valuation of the sada. That's only if it's not fully grown. But kaven d'lo tzarech l'sada, once it's fully grown, is bein nayhu boy shlumi, has to pay the value of the peros on the market. Amar Rav Huna Bar Chia, Amar Rav Yirmiya Bar Abba, Don Rav Kirabi Meir, Upasak Hilchasa Kirabi Shima. You know, it's on one issue Rav accepted the Shita of Rabbi Meir, on another issue Rav Shim. What is this all about? Don Rav Kirabi Meir, Disanya Kosav Lorishon, Velo chasmalo, lasheni v'chasmalo of daksu basa. Didri Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Yecholehi shetomer nachas ruach asisi lebaili. Okay, that's number one. So first we have a brice that records a machlokus between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda as far as ksuba is concerned. We'll get back to that in just a minute. Rabbi and Rav passing like Rabbi Meir in this machlokus. And now we get back to our Mishnah, Pasak Hilchasak Rabbi Shimon. Where did Rav accept the sheet of Rabbi Shimon? Kihad, it's not like our Mishnah. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Ochla Peres Kmurim, Mishalemes Peres Kmurim, Imsa Sav, Imsa Saim, Sa Saim. Notice we don't do a Shuma Agav Sode. He pays straight value of the payrolls because these payrolls don't need the karka anymore. They're already considered Bitsurim Dami. The first machlokes, which is the machlokes between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda in Ksuba, is about the following case. There's such a thing as, just one second, as a soda, a karka miyuchedes l'ksuba. What does it mean? A man could designate, a married man will designate a specific area of karka for the collection of haksuba, which means that anyone who buys that karka has to realize he's taking a real chance because there's a special shibud on that karka, and in event that the husband who sold him the karka dies or divorces his wife, she, by virtue of her rights, the ksuba could collect that karka. So the lokeach is in a very precarious situation. It's got a shibud on it. So what the lokeach wants to do here, and this was apparently standard, you know, a standard method back in the day, is in the sale, in the bill of sale, the contract, he would have the woman sign onto the contract. And I'm sorry, when I said he would have her, who is the he?
He is the buyer.
Oh, so that's a mistake. Sorry. Correct myself. He is the seller, the husband. Right, because again, the husband wants to calm down the buyer and extract from him a high price. So what he does is, he gets his wife to sign onto the contract. Now, what's the significance of her signing onto the contract? She is therefore forfeiting, she's waiving her rights to collect her ksuba from that karka, which is great for the husband, and it'll be great for the buyer. But the only thing is, she has a right to claim, we'll see under what circumstances, that the only reason I signed is not because I really meant it, but because I wanted to make my husband happy.
Shalom bayis.
Yeah, like a shalom bayis kind of thing. So Rav Meir says that there's an exception to this rule, that she doesn't absolutely always have the right to make that claim. What happened in this scenario? The buyer, or the seller, right, was not able to get her to agree to sign the contract when he tried to sell it to that karka, to Reuven. Then later on he tried to sell it to Shimon, and she did agree to sign the contract. Says Rabbi Meir, of the Ksubas, we take the second signature seriously. Why? Because she's already proven, she's established that she can look her husband in the face and tell him, fife their own and go fly a kite, I'm not willing to sign. She's a tough one. Once she's established herself as a tough one, if she does agree to sign in the second ksuba, I'm sorry, in the second sale, or the second attempt to sell, then Rabbi Meir says we take it seriously. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, Yecholi Hishatomer Nachasrua Chasisi Lebaili. I only did it because of the psychological pressure to want to make my husband happy. Atem Malachem Alai. And therefore you buyers have no right to claim based on my signature that I can't collect my ksuba from that character. I ask Rabbi Yehuda the question, but in the first case she refused to sign. Okay, the pressure was building up, you know. Pasak Rav, Rav Paskins, Hilchasa Kirab Shimon. I'm sorry, that's already our mission. So in this case, Pasak Rav, Hilchasa Kirabi Meir, that once she's already refused to sign in the first star, that's an indication that she cannot claim that when she signed in the second star, I only did it, you know, as a fig leaf, as Nachas Ruach Sisi Labaili. No, we take it very, very seriously.
Is she allowed to do that?
she's without Ksuba.
Well, she's not without Ksuba because he'll have to find another piece of karka.
Oh, but she's not giving up.
She's not giving up the rights to Ksuba. She's giving up rights to the Sheba to the Ksuba to collect from this karka.
Just on that Sheba.
Okay, Rabos, I guess we'll stop here. You know, the mission of Aish, I think I'll cover next week. We'll see how it goes. Okay, then?
It'll be a real good sugya or not.
All right. This last sugya was particularly challenging for me because there's so many shittas in the Tanoim and the Braisa. But all right, I think we did an adequate job.